Welcome to Pull Quotes. I'm Michal Stein. Co-hosting with me is Catherine Singh, Managing Online Editor. Welcome, Catherine.
Happy to be here.
So I think it's appropriate that you are filling in the co-host chair this week since we're talking about Netflix.
My favorite pastime.
Yes. Catherine and I have a very active Riverdale thread. We're both big fans. And so Riverdale is not only a Netflix show, but it films in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Which is a kind of a fun fact.
So Riverdale is an American show, but it films here and it employs some Canadian actors, and a lot of their crew that they employ in Vancouver would probably be mostly made up of Canadians, even though the creator's not Canadian, the writers aren't necessarily Canadian, and I don't know who directs most of it, but they don't have to be Canadian. And so that's what makes it a service production as opposed to Canadian content. Which is like Ant with an E would be a good example of a show that's Canadian content.
And we were also talking a little bit about To All the Boys I've Loved Before, which itself is an American film. It's based off a novel by an American author. It employed American actors. And I think they were trying really hard to make it look like Seattle or Portland. And it was, in fact, Vancouver as well.
And this, I mean, Canadian cities have been masquerading as American ones in film and television forever. Toronto's been Manhattan for Suits for many years. Everyone loves having a Meghan Markle spotting when she was living here. And I can't remember if I've mentioned it on this podcast before, but I actually used to work in film production. And part of my job was to do things like apply for government funding for shows that were either in development or about to go into production. And another part of my job was finding production office and studio space, which was very challenging because, as we were saying, all this work that's coming to Toronto, but there's not a lot of space. All of which is to say, I've been following what's been going on with the ways that Netflix is getting involved in the Canadian film industry, and I have some questions.
So in September 2017, Melanie Joly, who at the time was the Minister of Canadian Heritage, announced a partnership with Netflix, that Netflix would commit to spending $500 million on original programming in Canada over 5 years.
But this looks different than the way that Canadian content works with traditional broadcasters.
How so?
So the way that a lot of mainstream Canadian films and television shows get funded in Canada are through government funding, like tax credits. But major broadcasters also fund Canadian productions through Telefilm and the Canadian Media Fund. And the Canadian Media Fund is a federal government organization. And there are provincial ones as well. The Ontario one used to be called the Ontario Media Development Corporation, or the OMDC, but now it's called Ontario Creates, I think. Producers can apply directly for things like development and production funding, but Netflix operates outside of these bodies. And it's not entirely clear to me how this is different from what they were doing before, like filming To All the Boys I've Loved Before in Vancouver. And to be honest, I haven't seen much written about it so far.
So we brought in Alex Lalonde and Chandler Levac to break this down. Alex is the Vice President of Business Development and Operations at New Metric Media, a Canadian independent production company. And Chandler is an independent filmmaker and a freelance film critic for The Globe and Mail. So we'll hear from them both in a moment.
So with me today, I have Chandler Levac and Alex Lalonde. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Chandler, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, I'm a freelance film critic for The Globe and Mail, and I also make movies on the side.
Alex, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes, I am with New Metric Media. I'm the VP of Business Development and Operations.
So we're here today to talk about the coverage of the different Netflix deals that are going on with the Canadian government. So to give some context for people who might not know, there was a deal that was announced in the fall of 2017 that $500 million would be spent on original productions in Canada by Netflix. So when this deal was announced, what did you expect that to mean at the time? Alex, do you want to go first?
Yeah. What did I expect it to mean? Well, I expected it not to mean that they were going to invest $500 million in Canadian Indigenous projects. I think that I expected it to mean that there was going, that Netflix would have a presence in Canada, and that what it would do was to open up an opportunity for producers to diversify the way in which they produce their projects, so that Netflix would invest in some Canadian, you know, sort of Indigenous productions, and also bring some service work to Canada as well. So giving producers the, you know, some just ultimately opening up possibilities for Canadian producers.
When you say Canadian Indigenous programming, you mean like programming that was
local, yeah. Created by, in Canada by Canadians, developed by Canadian producers, written by Canadian writers and showrunners, yeah.
And Chandler, what about you? What were your expectations at the time?
I mean, I think I had heard about this, but I think, you know, it's a strange conundrum, I think, for Canadian filmmakers, because, you know, we make things in a bit of a vacuum, and then our audience doesn't really exist. Like, Canadian film goers don't go to see Canadian movies in the theaters. They don't ever get any kind of online distribution on Netflix in Canada or in the U.S. So it's sort of like you make a movie and then it kind of disappears into an endless void. And there's so much talent and incredible voices in Canada. I really feel like the Canadian film industry right now is having a renaissance. There's like this incredible next emerging generation of filmmakers that are completely different from what you would think of what a Canadian film should like look or sound or feel like. And, you know, a service like Netflix would be like an incredible thing for, because we are all consuming all of this content from the United States. We know what great movies and TV programming looks and feels like. And I think there's a generation of Canadian talent that could make those shows, but there's just no avenues for us to do it.
So I was expecting, like, my first instinct, Alex, you and I were talking earlier about how a lot of my own experience in working in film production was applying to grants through the CMF. So my first thought was, oh, I'm going to go to the CMF website and see what grant, like, what funding model they've put up with all this new Netflix money. And obviously that never happened. Do either of you have a sense of how this money is being administered, or what form this investment is really taking?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's, I'm not sure that qualifying as an investment per se, sort of in terms of the way in which we think about investments when we talk about Canadian financing, because we often talk, when we think about Canadian financing, we often talk about soft money, which is grants, tax credits, and so on and so forth. And so I don't think that the money is going to come in the form of, you know, sort of grants to producers. I think that it is going to have, what Netflix is going to do is have an infrastructure in Canada now. And what that will look like is they're going to have, you know, sort of people, boots on the ground here. They're going to have production spaces. They're going to be meaningfully interacting with the Canadian industry. And, you know, just to sort of riff on something that Chandler was just saying, I think that there's a great opportunity actually for not only experienced and veteran producers to take projects to Netflix, but also for the emerging filmmakers. Because Netflix, what I do know is that they're looking for all different levels of production, so and projects, and they're looking for both film and television. So I think that there's going to be an opportunity. I hope that there's an opportunity for emerging filmmakers to bring their scripts and their features and their TV series to them for consideration. And so I think it's going to open the door in some ways for, you know, sort of that opportunity. And I think it also opens the door for more seasoned veteran producers in Canada also to sort of just think about how they're going to sort of expand. And so I don't think it's going to be sort of like, okay, here's a fund and we're going to give out money. I think it's, how can we work together? How can we make this work? How can we work with, and not forgetting about the conventional broadcasters and the theatrical distributors, and how can we work together to sort of ultimately to leverage what we have and to sort of potentially open up the industry just a little bit wider.
Chandler, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, it just makes me think about something like Vice, like when there was that boon, you know, with Vice and they came to Canada and they greenlit all these television programs and there was all this like excitement and interest of how much money they were going to sink in and how much incredible original content they were going to produce in Canada. And then within like 3 or 4 years, it just like it went kind of bottom up. And I just hope that doesn't happen again if they are going to deliver on this promise. I mean, it would be incredible if Netflix started greenlighting, you know, original Canadian TV shows or original movies from Canadian filmmakers, or even if Canadian filmmakers could have their movies on Netflix. You know, that would just be such an incredible thing, even to spread the awareness of like what Canadian movies and voices are out there. But I feel like we've also sort of been burned by that like a few times with these, you know, it's kind of the common trend of like new media where like it's almost like frontier times where like some prospector comes to town like, I'm going to green light all these things. And then within a few years, it sort of dissipates again.
Mm-hmm. So what's your assessment so far of how the coverage of these new Netflix moves have been in news media?
I mean, I guess I like a lot of older millennials. I get my news from Twitter, and I I don't really you know, I've seen a few like headlines or something, but I haven't really seen anything like concrete, I guess. And I think it depends on like how it sort of serves into your ecosystem. Like I'm more a part of like the Canadian independent film world, mm-hmm. so. You know, I'm not like a producer with Telefilm. I don't have any kind of like, I'm not like an incorporated media company. Right. So you would have a different perspective on how totally. This would feed into you. I think I'm more like as a young creator, like how, you know, there's so many TV shows that I've been watching lately that I've loved. I just watched that Lindy West show, Shrill. And
I'm dying to watch it.
It's so good. And I was like, you know, I think I was saying to my friend, like, this show is so good. And it's so sad that Canada would never make a Shrill. You know, there's so many young voices in Canada that could so desperately make an incredible TV show, and it would never get seen. It would never air on the CBC. If it did, it would only air for one season. Like, so many of my friends, have, even when they get those opportunities, like the Canadian film system just fails them over and over again. And you know, something like Netflix could really fill that gap.
Can you expand a little bit more why you think a show like Shrill could never work here?
Well, I don't know what the problem is. It's almost like, I guess the audience is, we don't know what the actual audience of demographics of who's watching Canadian television are. So I think people have to kind of cater it to sort of the most mainstream audience to kind of, because the people that are actually watching Canadian CBC shows are like all over the country and they're sort of a different, I don't know. It feels like the people that are watching Canadian TV shows are a completely different demographic than the people that are watching like HBO shows or Netflix shows, even though that can't be the same because it's all the same audience.
Yeah. I don't know what Shrill is actually, and I haven't seen it, so I'm gonna make note of it because I'm interested in it. Canada's such a big place.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a large country and it's so different from province to province. It's interesting. I have this discussion a lot about audiences and, you know, sort of what we're making. Even when we look at, as a production company, and I'm only involved in development on a high level, which is sort of ultimately sort of negotiating the deals and putting things to paper and figuring out how we can pay for it and financing and looking at those kinds of strategies as opposed to sort of digging down into the creative. But we have Letterkenny, mm-hmm. which speaks to such a different audience than Bad Blood, for example, two of our shows. But yeah, Canada's a massive country, and I feel like Toronto's such a big city, and I feel like we have a different sensibility. And we do have a different sensibility than I think, you know, sort of people on the West Coast, people on the East Coast, people in the prairies. So I hear you. It's difficult to figure out what we don't have a sort of, you know, homogenous Canadian voice. I think that It's tricky. It's definitely tricky. And, you know, and our broadcasters are very specific. I think the CBC, you know, sort of speaks to, you know, sort of a broader audience. And then we have, you know, some of our specialty channels, you know, sort of start to narrow in and stay in different lanes. But even then, it's difficult for the conventional broadcasters not to be able to program across all of their different channels. Yeah, so that is really tough.
I have to say it's interesting talking about this from a film and television perspective, because I think we're having a very similar conversation in journalistic spaces about, I mean, obviously there's a money problem in journalism in Canada, and it's a money problem and an audience problem, and all of these things kind of go together, but there is so much more private funding for film and television to play. I mean, private and different public funding as well with government grants and tax credits. I want to talk a little bit about the announcement that from, I guess it was February, when Netflix announced that they'd leased all this production space in CineSpace and Pinewood Studios, which are these really big studios and office spaces in right kind of in the downtown east side of Toronto, near the lakeshore. So for context, these are studios where production companies can rent office and studio space. In the past, it's been shows like Chicago or Shape of Water, all sorts of different Canadian productions have filmed there. I saw numbers in places like the Toronto Star saying that this will create something like almost 2,000 jobs in the Canadian film industry, which, I mean, sounds amazing, but it doesn't specify what kind of jobs these are. What do you think Netflix renting all the space will actually mean? What will it look like?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm a weird person to answer this question. I mean, maybe it will mean that there'll be like a lot of cool PA opportunities for young filmmakers or something like that. I mean, that's kind of a trend, I guess, with a lot of things like we saw with like the Amazon, well, the almost Amazon move in Long Island City in New York. I guess there's just like, we live in this weird age of conglomerations and huge globalization. So there's always like going to be corporate takeovers in giant cities.
Yeah, I mean, I think Netflix is already sort of here, you know, it has, you know, they've been shooting in Canada. You're right. The spaces in sort of the Pinewoods, they did announce that they were going to sort of, you know, they were going to have a presence in Pinewood and send a space across the road. What I think that that means practically is that, yes, there's now less space, available space. My office happens to be in Pinewood, so we're quite close to that, you know, sort of to that announcement. I think what it will look like is, I think that the city understands that Netflix is coming and taking up local space, so I think that's going to look like new studios being built. I think that there will be a need for more space, and you know, and I think that it's I don't think that it's necessarily there's a beginning and an end to it. I think that this is a, you know, a partnership that they're going to sort of try on for size and see how it works. And I think that there's great opportunity, actually, to sort of that this is, you know, becomes a long lasting arrangement, and that we have, you know, sort of, again, just more options. Space wise, it's always been tricky,
yeah,
right, to try to figure out how to accommodate, you know, particularly, I think, for small independent features. But there's still other space out there. So
it's, yeah, having been on the side of the phone frantically calling everyone, yeah, to find it, that was kind of my first thought is, ooh, a little bit less space.
Yeah.
For now, at least.
Definitely less space. Definitely trickier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chandler, you've kind of been talking about this, that we kind of get excited by an influx of cash into the economy, and we feel like people are paying attention to us, which I feel like is such a Canadian
thing. Yeah, I was going to say it's very Canadian. Like, ooh, these Americans want to do business with us.
At the same time, Alex, you're talking about New Metric expanding into the States, so it is going both ways. Do you think that there's a sense that we are losing sight of the long-term cultural implications with Netflix coming in so strongly?
Well, I you know, it's interesting because I guess I've always grown up with this idea of like Canadian content and, you know, these CTRC laws and how, you know, even when you're consuming all of this American content, I mean, I grew up watching like The Simpsons like four times a day from like age five to 15, you know? And so much of, like, those American shows are, like, a part of my identity. But I also remember watching, like, hours and hours and hours of, like, shows on the CBC. And so I think it's, like, interesting. Canadians are always kind of, like, perceiving our own cultural identity from a far field. Like, we are ourselves, but we're also something else. But I think what is exciting about, you know, the potential of Netflix is just to see more shows from young Canadian creators that embody a diverse range of perspectives and opinions, because kind of the typical Canadian TV show, I mean, you don't have to see like a bruising drama about a family in a fishing village in Newfoundland where like someone's brother just died and they've all gathered for the funeral and secrets are revealed, you know, which is, I guess, kind of like the typical very cliched idea of what a Canadian movie looks like or something. You know, there's like, and it also, you know, like it's awesome that a show like Kim's Convenience is like the biggest comedy on the CBC, and it's about, you know, first generation immigrants, and it's, you know, a Chinese family, and we've, you know, it's been a long time since we've seen anything like that. But there's also like second, third, fourth generation voices and all kinds of perspectives from like queer filmmakers and people of color and, you know, just women. And I just want to see like a multiplicity of perspectives, and I don't always want to see it from like the same people, you know. I don't always want to see it from like the children of celebrities that are already kind of established in the Canadian star system.
Alex, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right. I think we have so many incredible, diverse voices in Canada, and I think that this is an opportunity for Canadians to have exposure in the international platform. And I think that more than ever, the doors are being opened, and I think it's such a great opportunity. I think that, I guess, your original question was, you know, sort of whether you felt like the Canadian voice was going to be watered down. And I think that my answer to that is no, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think, in fact, it's going to give us an opportunity to hear more Canadian voices.
Yeah.
To hear more diverse Canadian voices, to hear more female Canadian voices. And, I mean, you talk about Kim's Convenience, but the world can watch Kim's Convenience now on Netflix.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And Schitt's Creek, too.
I think it's a great
Schitt's
example,
Creek,
yeah.
And
they're finding
Moms,
audiences that
and
way.
And Alias Grace.
And Baroness from Sketcher.
Baroness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of our shows are now on Hulu. Like, people love Letterkenny. People love it.
It's a great show.
Canadian show, you know, sort of. And now it's on Hulu in the States, and they have access to it, and people love it. And so our voices are being heard more than ever. They're being heard internationally, not only in the States, but, you know, internationally across the world.
Like, look at Xavier Dolan as an example of like an auteur that, you know, he's from Quebec, but, you know, now his films really do kind of belong to the world, and he can win like the Palme d'Or at Cannes and stuff.
International treaty co-production on the feature film side and on the TV side gives us the opportunity to work with, you know, sort of work with international talent, and, you know, sort of, and pool our sort of, you know, our finances in order to sort of create content. And that's just yet another way for another opportunity and another strategy to sort of, you know, to get out into the world and to sort of really highlight what Canadians can do. I actually think more than ever there's more and more opportunities.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the idea of like, oh, is the Canadian voice going to get watered down? But I think the thing is, the Canadian voice can be anything. The Canadian voice is just anyone that comes to Canada and starts making art, or that is Canadian or was born in Canada or has a relationship to it. I think that's the thing.
And
that,
who has a story to tell.
Yeah.
Right?
As a journalist sitting here talking to a film critic / filmmaker and a producer at an independent Canadian production company, what kind of questions do you think that we should be asking around Netflix's involvement in the Canadian art, film and television industry?
I think Canadians kind of have low self-esteem sometimes, culturally. So instead of like being like, oh, thank you for coming here, take all of our studios, it's got to be like, well, what are you going to give us? Like, how is this a chance to, like you said, to have this platform that is mutually beneficial, where we can sort of highlight these new creators and showcase like a broad range of stories on all of different levels of media, and also get Canadian movies shown. I think that's really crucial, that instead of your independent film that you slaved over for 4 or 5 years and just playing at the Carlton for a week, like, how can it actually, you know, show up on Netflix and get introduced to all these audiences, like your real, like not your real audience, but like an audience that could find it and really fall in love with it and allow you to make more movies in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends sort of the, what perspective are you asking the question from, right? As an independent, you know, filmmaker, those are the right questions. And, you know, as a journalist, it may be something different. I mean, I think that we'll know more as, you know, sort of it becomes more clear. But obviously, well, how's it going to work? How do we get our, you know, sort of Canadian projects in front of Netflix executives in order for them to be considered? What's sort of the process? And, you know, how are you looking to operate with Canadian producers?
Thank you both very much for coming. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And now for our favorite segment, pull quotes. Catherine, what's your pull quote?
So my pull quote this week comes from an article by Elamin Abdel Mahmoud, who's from BuzzFeed, and he was also one of our panelists on the latest RRJ Unpublished event. And it was from a piece that came out last week in Cottage Life, titled Breaking the Color Code of the Canadian Cottage Experience. So in the piece, Elamin was making a link between cottaging or going to a cottage and kind of your Canadian identity or being Canadian, and the idea that that's not really accessible to everyone based primarily on race. Specifically in this piece, he was talking about immigrants and or people who are new to Canada. So my pull quote is, when people talk about cottaging as a quintessential Canadian experience, they almost invariably mean the white Canadian experience. The cottage as an idea is spoken about with great reverence, but rarely by non-white immigrants. So in the piece, he kind of talks about how the cottage as an ideal, I guess, is associated with leisure, but it's a very particular and very racialized type of leisure because, as we kind of know, leisure varies from culture to culture. And there's this idea that for immigrants who've come to Canada, the idea of being carefree means working hard and putting resources into creating an environment that's kind of successful for their kids. And he also touched on the romanticism of cottaging, as it was kind of called, and how it plays into this very Canadian narrative that we seem to have of people coming to the wilderness of Canada and kind of like taming it, but without mentioning or any regard whatsoever to the people who were there before. So he, in the piece, he talks about his own experience as well as other immigrants and the ways that they've kind of entered this space and made it their own. And it also made me think of a piece from August 2018 by Kamal Al-Sulaili. And it was a piece in Sharp magazine. And he just talked about similarly the idea of cottages as inherent in Canadian identity and how he's obviously he's been here for a really long time and he's always turned down the opportunity to visit his friends' cottages and how he thinks that that's kind of perceived as he's less Canadian. And I just picked this piece because I thought it was a really interesting and I guess kind of subtle way to think about national identity and your sense of identity and the things that make us Canadian and how we convey our identity, whether we're aware of it or not. And it made me think of my own experience and people I know who have cottages in Muskoka, say. They're of a certain demographic and helped me kind of interrogate the feelings that I seem to have looking at their photos on Instagram every summer and maybe where that comes from and what that means.
Thank you, Catherine. That's an interesting one to bring up as, I guess, the summer cottage season is not quite upon us, but certainly the articles that get written in kind of lifestyle section of newspapers and magazines will come out about like cottage decor and like how to, I mean, I love these pieces, like the best appetizers to serve at 5 o'clock as the, well, the sun isn't going down at 5 o'clock in the summer, but these are all like very fun, fluffy pieces that talk about, you know, the idyllic summer life at the cottage. And it's kind of neat to see these different takes on what it means to spend a summer at a cottage in Canada.
For sure. And I think I really liked that the piece was actually, I mean, very aptly, it was in cottage life. And I thought that was really great and an interesting, maybe different take than what we've usually seen there. So
thanks, Catherine.
Okay, Michal, what's your pull quote?
So lots of people have been writing about the federal government announcing how the $600 million they're going to spend on news media organizations is going to work. David Skok, the CEO and editor-in-chief of The Logic, wrote a letter from the editor on March 23rd with the headline, Tilting the Playing Field. First, he explains part of what the funding entails, so I'll just go through that. For an organization to qualify for a 25% refundable tax credit on salary or wages capped at $55,000, they must be, quote, primarily engaged in the production of original news content, and in particular, the content must be primarily focused on matters of general interest and reports of current events, including coverage of democratic institutions and processes, and must not be primarily focused on a particular topic, such as industry-specific news, sports, recreation, arts, lifestyle, or entertainment. And so my pull quote comes from later on in his piece. He writes, I've been working in newsrooms for almost two decades and can tell you with the utmost certainty that there isn't a single topic area, whether in sports, entertainment, or teen fashion, that doesn't at some point focus on matters of general interest, current events, and coverage of democratic institutions and processes. Would a sports publication in Calgary focused on covering the Calgary Flames' ongoing arena subsidies discussions with the city not be eligible? Would an entertainment publication reporting on the Canadian film tax credit or Netflix's relationship with Quebec not be eligible? Would a teen fashion publication focused on gender and LGBTQ plus rights not be eligible? Under the proposed outline, it seems they would not be. And I think that this kind of perspective on the money in whatever way it's going to be spent is a really interesting one to look at. And I think, especially based on what we're talking about today, like, as you're saying, Cottage Life just published this really thoughtful piece about, you know, how what we think about when we think about what it means to be Canadian looks different for different people. And I mean, we also brought in Alex and Chandler to talk about, to unpack a little bit about what this whole Netflix involvement in Canadian film means. And these are big questions that have far-reaching implications on jobs and in politics and all these kind of things. And I think we're right to be critical of not including these more specialized publications as necessary, and as I think that's what they're trying to do. And and I'm glad to see, I expected that many people would be commenting on the government's announcement, and I'm looking forward to see what else comes out and honestly what kind of innovation comes as kind of a reaction. So that's my pull quote today. And that's our show. Pull Quotes is produced by Lydia Abraha and by me, Michal Stein.
Thanks to Alex Lalonde and Chandler Levac for joining us this week. Thanks to Angela Glover and Lindsay Hanna for technical help. Our executive producer is Sonia Fata.
Thank you to Catherine Singh for joining me to host this week.
If you learned something today, please help us spread the word by sharing our show on social media and leaving us a rating in iTunes.
Have a friend who's into Canadian journalism? Tell them about Pull Quotes. They'll thank you. We promise.
You can find me on Twitter at Catherine E. Singh.
And me at Michal Stein, too. You can also visit rrj.ca for new stories every week. We'll see you next week on Pull Quotes.